Chapter 38. My New Neighbours. The aftermath of my sudden invasion and partition of West Flaria had far-ranging political consequences, but it was the short-term consequences that truly bothered me. First, there were the dead. 22 Sevendori, most of them Bovali, had fallen in defence of the Dyke Tower. Among them were some I would miss. Cowland's Pass had fallen without a single Sevendori death, because Raylan the Steady, the yeoman sent with a troop of militia to hold it in support of yeoman Cayman, had surrendered the pass to Gimbal's men without a fight the second day of the siege. He had been certain of Gimbal's swift victory, and when faced with actual battle, he proved more cowardly than steady. We found him among the prisoners we'd culled from the forces camped around the Dyke Tower. There were a lot more prisoners to deal with than I liked. The mercenaries were no problem, and many I took into service in one way or another. The conscripted commoners were largely pardoned and sent home, just in time to finish out the harvest. A few were held out for a special consideration, upon Sir Kay's advice, and they would have to be dealt with severely. That meant court, and for 4 days after we overthrew the Warbird, we sat under a pavilion on the Sevendor village commons and plucked his army bare. The men who had taken up arms against me while wearing mage's marks were spared the noose, but sentenced to indenture in Sevendor's service for 2 years, as part of the new Iron Ring force in the Penumbra. One or two Sir Kay singled out for yet harsher punishment, and insisted they do 6 months of hard labour as villeins and bondsmen first. Sire Gimbal had promised the men the censors would remove their marks after victory in battle, and I could not fault them for that. Still, as oath-breakers, I had the right to sentence them, and I might as well get some labour out of them. I allowed the yeomanry, country knights and itinerant sellswords, to leave without marks, but only if they were able to pay token ransoms to back up their pledges. As most of them were now vassals to myself, Baron Arathaniel or Sire Sigilyn, I doubted they would try to renege on their pledges, especially when we had demonstrated how we treated oath-breakers. A few were genuinely happy to accept new lieges, as Gimbal had angered many of his vassals over the years. One was particularly happy, Sire Fetterlin of Hosley. He had gone to war against Sevendor only upon threat of execution, as he did not wish to fight a man who held his son hostage. For his part, young Sir Festeran had valiantly defended Sevendor and had led 2 unsuccessful sorties against the mercenaries in Cowland's Pass. He had hurt his wrist in the last encounter, but even in the face of fighting his father's liege, the brave young knight had continued to act more as a loyal vassal than a hostage. Sir Kay, who masterminded the defence, had not balked at using the lad's enthusiasm just because of a legal technicality. The siege of Bovall Castle had taught him how useless such things were in a time of emergency. But Hosley was one of the 5 domains I'd claimed in conquest, one of 5 closest to Sevendor. Sire Fetterlin was pleased to be able to lay his sword at my feet and be the first among my new vassals to swear fealty. Not all the lords were as enthusiastic, and one, the lord of the conveniently named estate of Northwood, was unwilling to swear, forfeited his lands, and followed Gimbal into exile. The other 3 were reluctant to embrace the new regime, but after speaking with them over lunch the second day after the liberation, I convinced them that faithful service, mild tribute, and a prosperous vassalage were a better route for them to consider than reluctant service, punishing tribute, and a rebellious vassalage would be. The tales of what we had done to the castles in West Flaria were starting to circulate, and by the end of the meal, all 3 of them agreed to swear to me at court the next day. Gimbal's loyalists put me in a quandary. Those who weren't willing to give up their lands for their former liege were also openly bitter about their defeat. Any who were vocally so, I gave a mage mark on their forehead, a broken snowflake, and declared them outlaws in Sevendor. They had until nightfall to ride away with 1 horse, 1 sword, and no armour. If they came within the limits of my domain again, they would forfeit their lives, or be sent to the Iron Ring. It wasn't all punishments. Arathaniel and Sigilyn didn't hesitate to reward their faithful followers with gifts of the vacant lands they'd just acquired. That was how you kept the peace in a feudal system. You made sure everyone around you was a friend. If they weren't, you take them from office and put more friendly leadership in place. Then there were a few tougher cases. The one Sir Kay had recommended face more serious deliberation than mere banishment. The betrayal of Raylan the Steady, in particular. As was brought to my attention at court, Yeoman Raylan's quick surrender was not inspired by fear, but by avarice. He was promised his choice of estates in Sevendor, after the new regime was established, and even had the contract he'd insisted Gimbal's agents write clutched to his breast when he was captured in camp. I let him spend a few days in the dungeon before he was brought before me. The charges were read: oath-breaking, cowardice, and treason. Raylan looked scared while they were read, but steeled himself as deliberations began. "How is what you did not oath-breaking?" I asked him sternly. "And what motivated you? Have I not been generous with you and your folk? Are you not far wealthier now than you were a year ago? Yet you betray me to my enemies on the field of battle. The worst sort of betrayal for a man who has sworn an oath to defend me. What have you to say for yourself, Raylan?" "You are a witch, lord," he yelled at me. "Sire Gimbal was a proper knight, a proper gentleman. He was no sorcerer, consorting with all manner of—" I stopped his rant by enveloping his head in a bubble of silence. He had no idea we couldn't hear him anymore, but he could still hear us. "I am not persuaded by this defense," I said mildly. "When one is presented with such a disloyal vassal, how do you handle it, Baron? I am new to this sort of thing." Arathaniel looked thoughtful and twirled his mustache. "Were he one of my sworn men, his head would be in a noose before it went up over my gate. Such treachery a wise lord does not abide." "I agree," Sire Sigilyn said, "though it pains me to condemn any man to death lightly. An oath sworn and broken in such a manner. Justice demands his head." Raylan had finally figured out we couldn't hear him. "Did you hear that, Raylan? These gentlemen would hang you or decapitate you for your crimes. Can you think of any reason I shouldn't?" "By law, technically speaking, he should have been forced to go to the Iron Ring. But if he was a coward here, he'd be a coward in the Penumbra Lands. I expected him to beg for mercy, or spit in my face in defiance. Instead, he just glared at me in silence. I even lowered the spell a moment to allow him to be heard." "If you will not even defend your own actions, then how can I?" I asked. I thought of the Seven Dori who had died at the Dyke Tower, and those wounded in skirmishes at Cowland's Pass. There were a lot of my people in the crowd sporting bandages or splints. "You broke your oath to me when it mattered most. I'll give you a moment to make your peace with the gods. While we can't hear you, I assure you they can. And then it is your head." Raylan still refused to speak and continued to glare at me. I gave him ample time to make his peace, if there is such a thing. "It will take time to erect a gallows, Mage Lord," Sir Kay advised me quietly. "I can summon an axe or a great sword." "I do my own dirty work," I said, "especially when I take it personally. My wife and child were behind that castle wall, and this man, who swore to protect them, delivered the pass he was charged to protect without a fight instead. His head it shall be, but not by steel or rope." I summoned a little power from my sphere. The magical bubble that kept sound in was transformed. Now it formed, for one brief moment, a solid plane, just like the magical planes of force we used to split wood or stone. Raylan's head tumbled to the ground, followed by his body, both spurting blood as I let the spell fail. "Next case," I called mildly. I tried very, very hard not to be sick at what I'd done. It's easy to murder with magic, once you realize how delicate the human body is. But whatever my personal qualms, I couldn't let him get away with such treason and live. If my vassals knew the penalty of treachery in advance, they'd think twice before considering such madness in the future. I had enemies. The justice of a mage lord must be swift if he's to be respected, I was learning. The next cases also required a capital decision. Sir Erenthal had been captured leading a raiding party over the pass the first day of the siege, and had been in the dungeon he had once presided over for almost 2 weeks. He growled and spit and cursed me to the gods. His head joined Raylan's after only a few moments of his vitriol. as did the heads of five others caught engaging in treacheries varying from banditry to rape. All five were found guilty and executed. For their crimes, their blood stained the white soil of Sevendor Commons. I felt faint, and I called a break for lunch while they dragged the bodies away. I needed wine. A lot of wine. Raylan wasn't alone in his treachery. Seven of his henchmen had been as staunch against me as he. In front of a jury of their fellow Sevendori, one witness after another testified to their antipathy toward me and my wife, and their willingness to betray us to Sire Gimbal. The jury found them guilty of several different counts of oath-breaking. I condemned them all to bear mage marks of the broken snowflake on their faces and to be enlisted in the Iron Ring. Their chattels were forfeit to the domain, their lands confiscated, and their families exiled. A few begged mercy and abjured their husbands, and I mercifully let them live with relatives or neighbors. I'm not a monster. Another dozen Genli men had been complicit in Raylan's treachery. I gave them the choice of the Iron Ring, or losing their freedom and becoming full serfs, owing 5 days a week service to the manor. The timid took to serfdom. The stupid took the ring. It wasn't all punishments and executions. There was heroism to reward among my people, too. First to Sir Festeron, for his valiant service to Sevendor. In a time of need, I released him from his ransom and sent him to his father's joyous arms. I also gave him an exquisite warsword, one borne until recently by Sir Brummel, and his pick of chargers from our loot. To Sir Ferrando, who commanded the dyke tower during much of the siege, I gave one of the finer destriers we captured, and 100 ounces of gold. His eyes bulged at the riches. He could buy a small estate with that much. In fact, considering the bumper crop of them now available, that's precisely what he planned to do. Sir Roncil led 2 brave sorties against the invaders while they were in retreat, capturing several Westflarians in the process. I gave him a spirited destrier of his own, a beautiful bay stallion, and 50 ounces of gold, more than doubled their ransoms. He had broken his sword on an enemy shield the day before we arrived, so I gave him his choice of the hundreds of blades we had just captured. My brother-in-law, Yeoman Sagal, had led the militia's defense of the dyke tower when Ferrando and Roncil were leading the lancers, and had bravely covered their retreat. When one of Gimbal's advances threatened to overwhelm the dyke, he led his archers in a punishing shower of volleys that drove them back, and then supported the warriors defending it against the remnants by wading into the fray hand to hand, leading the militia himself. To him I gave 20 ounces of gold, a fancy suit of armor he looked afraid of, and a battle axe. I knew he was a poor swordsman and a keen bowman, but I'd also seen him split wood. He knew how to use an axe. He accepted the gift with some trepidation. Yeoman Rollo and Loas each received a similar gift, though they bore the arms a bit more stoically than Sagal. 12 or so other acts of heroism were brought to my attention and gained my reward, particularly the West Woodmen. Cayman and his folk had responded to the banner call enthusiastically, and had done their best to retake Cowland's Pass after Raylan's treachery. I rewarded several, at Sir Kay or Alia's recommendation, including giving young Kyre a beautiful brown charger from our loot. Finally, to Sir Kay, who had overseen the defense of the domain, I gave 300 ounces of gold, 5 horses, 10 suits of armor, 10 swords, and other sundries. He was grateful at the largesse, embarrassed even, but did not understand my reasoning at first. "You have an estate of your own now, and you have military obligations," I explained. "I have an armory stuffed to the rafters with captured arms, thanks to Sire Gimbal's foolishness, and now you have enough to outfit 4 or 5 lances. Should your liege call your banner," I said, winking at Baron Arathaniel. "In truth, I don't foresee a need for much military service on the horizon, thanks to Mage Lord Minilan. But it's good to know it's there if I need it," his liege assured him, "and it is good to know just how capable a man is in war, as well as on the tawny field. Well done, Sir Kay. Well done." Sir Kay blushed at the praise. "Now, as soon as these prisoners are disposed of and the domain is in good order, I'm giving you a few weeks off to visit Lady Estrant. No doubt she's been worried by news of the siege." "Thank you, Mage Lord," Sir Kay said humbly. "That would be a comfort." "Don't tarry too long," I reminded him. "Your leave will be up just around the date you've set for your wedding. I wouldn't want to be late for that if I were you. I hear Alia spent most of the siege planning it, and if you messed it up, then you'd best join Gimbal in East Flaria. So, Mage Lord, Lord Brother Hamaris said that evening at a quiet banquet in the Great Hall, where we were bidding our new allies goodbye, I see you made my prophecy come to pass after all, and a lot sooner than even I expected. I had good counsel, good intelligence, and gold. I shrugged. All I lacked was a reason to act. Sire Gimbal and the Censorate provided that. I hope this proves to be the beginning of a long and profitable alliance, Baron Arathaniel said approvingly. I can see great things coming to the Bontol Vales. Great things. My son just wrote to me from Chepstan. He added, two Sashtali domains are suddenly very interested in renewing their fealty to Sandaria, thanks to that bridge your young mage built. Brilliant sorcery. Not a soul wants to enter from the Sashtali side now, and I hear he conjured a tidy little inn there in the bargain. I had yet to see Birchroot Bridge, but by all accounts Rondal had crafted a clever piece of enchantment and illusion. More importantly, he had reopened an important economic and military route, one that would allow the former liege of those domains to start reasserting his power. I'm hopeful, Sire Sigilan agreed. The Lorden mine is already profitable, and will likely see much more demand for it. I'll need the income. I have a few domains and estates to rebuild, and repeople. Half of my new lands are deserted. I'll be spread thin just protecting them. Well, the mercenaries are paid up through the end of the month, I pointed out. After that, well, I'd suggest you have your people in place. But as far as folk to work the land, I wouldn't worry. This time next year, the waves of refugees will be moving east, searching for safety. In 2 years, the problem won't be not enough labor. It will be too many mouths to feed. But if you prepare to receive those folk, and have crofts ready to be filled, I dare say you can restore them to their former glory once again. What of your new lands, Mage Lord? Asked Sir Alstead, Sigilan's grey-haired old castellan. Half of them suffer from neglect as bad as Sevendor did, near enough, under Gimbal's rule. Will you pour gold into them as you did this beautiful vale? If I need to, I admitted. They are now mage lands, and they will be entitled to some of the benefits of that. But for the most part, I will let their lords govern them as they see the need, within reason. I wonder what the rest of the Riverlands will say when news of the eradication of the Warbird is heard, mused Sigilan. They will know that the mage lands are not to be trifled with, I declared. They will know not to toy with the allies of the mage lord, too, pointed out Sir Ronsel, eyeing the Baron. If nothing else, it will make Bokeraton and Mizzledore more cautious in their dealings with Sandaria now. Aha! The Baron chuckled. Your Wilderland's knights waste no time in learning the local politics, Mage Lord. Beware of that. But I admit, I feel more at ease about our frontiers, despite the new lands to administer. Now that I face Vulric, and not that pimple Gimbal, I know what I have to deal with. He is much like his sire. More so than Gimbal. He will only attack if he sees weakness or gain, and not lightly. And we send his brother back to him ruined and in disgrace, Sire Sigilan observed. One would think he owes us something for that alone. While I was attending to getting my domain back into shape, Pentandra, Planus, and Sarakim enjoyed the hospitality of Sevendor. I was interested to watch how Penny and Alia got along, now that the issue of my status was resolved. I credited Minalian with sustaining their relationship on the basis of cuteness alone. Alia had to concede that he adored Pentandra, and Penny freely admitted that Minalian was the most adorable baby in the world, and Alia the perfect mother. After that, they got along fine. But Penny was still distant from the baby, and spent more time observing him than playing with him. For someone who is so involved with sex, it's amazing how little regard she holds for its non-magical products. Her interest in Minalian I can only credit to the fact that he was also a magical product of a sort. Penny was fascinated with his role in the snowstone spell. So was I, but I just saw a baby when I looked at him. Planus was particularly fascinated by Olmeg's innovations with crops, the proof of which was bursting our granaries and forcing folk to dig more root cellars. When he found that grain yields had gone from 3 to 1 for wheat to 6 to 1, and that we now had more maize than we could handle, he commissioned Olmeg to review his own grain-producing estates for efficiency. Pentandra, ironically enough, was soon fascinated by Bannermore's plans for the upcoming magical fair, once she got over her native snobbery. She was a little off-put at first by an uncredentialed foot-wizard come entrepreneur having a witchstone, but Bannermore's no-nonsense ideas about magic and willingness to consider her suggestions made him acceptable to her. "It's a new era," she admitted when I called her on her growing friendship with the man. I was having a private dinner one evening with my high magi visitors on the roof of my tower. "He wasn't imperially trained, and his talent is limited, but he understands the culture better than most." "Why, Penny," Planus teased, "your mother would find your association shocking." "Hasn't she always? We must begin to reach out to our more ignorant colleagues and encourage them to better themselves. Oh, and the things he told me went on downstairs at the Robin Wing Conclave while we were rewriting the magical universe," she said. "He's a lot more shrewd than he looks."
"I am not denigrating the man. Quite the contrary, cousin. I do find his proposals for rebuilding Sevendor Village to be intriguing," agreed Planus, as he choked down what passed for wine in my cellars. "Permanent mage lights on the high street, an underground sewer system, a permanent breeze to keep the wood smoke from becoming cloying, more public privies, an artisan's quarter for crafting enchantments. The man speaks as much like a burgher as a mage," he said with good-natured scorn. "He also asked me to register him as your spell warden." "I've never heard the term." I shrugged. "I made it up. I put him in charge of magic in the Vale, to keep me from spending my time arbitrating between magi, or between magi and the townsfolk. If you can have a hay warden, why not a spell warden?"
"But I thought you gave him a half-size stone. Just a fragment," Sarakim asked, his own witchstone glowing in his left earlobe. Unlike most of us high magi, Sarakim was not only willing to put his stone in a piece of jewelry, he wore it on his ear, where it wouldn't be parted from him. "And he isn't even trained in war. He's a merchant," he dismissed.
"He doesn't have to be as powerful as any other mage. He just needs to be able to use his head and call it to my attention if someone is misusing their powers. Then I send someone powerful, or come myself if needed. Bannermore is a bureaucrat, but I'm finding bureaucrats as necessary as archers these days." That was a deliberate nod to Sarakim, who had been working daily with the militiamen on duty, honing their skills with the Wilderland bows they had used so effectively at the Dyke Tower, and defending Cowland's Pass. The man was almost useless for most kinds of war, but his talent with a bow rivaled his talent as a mage, and neither had left much room for a talent in humility.
"That is a poor position for a war mage to find himself in," chuckled the Mawini, who had taken the notice with comical graciousness. "Your people are good archers, not great, but very good," he said, which was high praise. "But you, Mage Lord, you bathe those around you in opportunity. Yet have you done much magic yourself?"
The question startled me for a moment. I looked around at the gleaming white castle, washed clean of the summer dust and soot by yesterday's rainstorm. Excepting for transforming an entire mountain and castle into a unique magic substance? "No. Not really," I replied mildly. That got a laugh from everyone. I had shared the unique circumstances of my son's birth with every thaumaturge I knew, just to figure out how it happened. And I say that in all seriousness. I have done very little magic myself. I have depended upon others to work the wonders, but that has been to my benefit.
"Leave him alone, Sarakim," Planus reproved the Marwini mage. "I've seen how much paperwork my cousin does. If Minolin does a tithe of it, he probably has more important matters to concern him than research."
"While I love pure research," I agreed, "and hate paperwork with a growing passion, it appears that I'll not have much time for either in the near future. If the Gavanni continue their advance toward Barrowbell, I will likely be recalled to the field." "There," I said it. I had been ignoring the possibility for far too long.
But the recent conquest of Westflaria had not only reminded me that there was a war on, it had removed my greatest obstacle to attending it.
Alia is not going to like that,
Pentandra observed quietly. She and my wife had grown steadily closer, which unnerved me greatly. While I was less anxious of a sudden fight breaking out, the idea that the two women closest to me in my life were conspiring against me was a new type of anxiety. She's not the only one, I nodded grimly. Battle is the last place I want to go right now, but it may be necessary. She may not like it, but she'll have to live with it.
I understand the lady's trepidation. The last time you left her alone here, Minolin, she got besieged,
Planus pointed out.
That is bound to make any new mother nervous, observed Sarakim sagely.
It's not like it was her first siege, I pointed out. Seven Doors' defences worked as we designed them, save for the treachery of a weak man. With that problem solved, and no local enemies to contend with, I don't see what the problem would be, except the possibility of me not returning, I conceded guiltily.
She will survive,
Pentandra said diplomatically. I think Rad would be a fool to risk someone as important as you on the battlefield, but I don't wear the shiny hat. But I do hope you can wait until after the magic fair before you deploy yourself. It would be a shame if all of Bannermore's good work wasn't appreciated by his master.
That will be up to the Gavanni, I'm afraid, I shrugged. They rarely let me know what they're planning.